Hey, and welcome to another edition of the Rugby Report Card. With me this week to review week 6 of 15 of the Super Rugby Championship is Jim May. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. Look, we're logging on to get a power half hour out, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still concerned by Blake in his singlet down here, but how are you, mate?
Mate, when you get shredded, you get shredded.
No, it's not even...
Enjoy it.
It's not the shredded singlet. It's the one where the shoulders are a bit long on the shirt. I don't know how... It's like you cut the arms off, but it's a full normal tee. You just cut the arms off.
It's the Mac from Always Sunny.
That's it. Yeah, it's not a glamorous one.
It's not a good look, is it?
Yeah, you been to the gym today, mate?
Always, mate. Never miss a day.
Sly number one on the podcast, everyone. That's awesome. What was maybe not so awesome was this week's round of the rugby. We'll probably start with the lows at the beginning of the round. Obviously, Crusaders Chiefs, just touched on that very briefly. Disappointing that the Crusaders got up because it was fun watching the dynasty or the losing dynasty continue. However,
I jinxed it, man.
Real shame. And I have to say my one view on this, I watched the second half, but just even the fact that Damian McKenzie was rested for this round, I thought it was a real shame. I understand we've got to look after player welfare and stuff like that. But for a blockbuster game, you know, at obviously in Christchurch on Good Friday, I thought it was would have been nice to have seen McKenzie light it up.
Why didn't he play?
He was rested, I believe.
Rested? What are you talking about? You can't just rest a bloke in round 6. He's played 5 games of a 15-round season and he's earned himself oranges, has he?
I hear you. I hear, mate. But that's how New Zealand do it.
Off it.
It was also interesting in the week as well that I also heard maybe they rested him because Munster are coming sniffing for Damian McKenzie as well to go up to the north as well. So maybe they were off them a little bit. But yeah, real shame that game. It would have been nice to see that blockbuster game. But what wasn't a blockbuster game, and I know I'm moving on from that quickly, was the Tars Rebels. Disappointing in many facets, and I know we'll get into the nitty-gritty, but what did you think, Jim?
Tars Rebels?
Yeah.
I've never been more disappointed in 15 blokes in my life. I just was so angry.
What about the other 15?
I couldn't even register. My disappointment clouded my judgment, mate. All I could see was 15 dudes. I was fucking off. Like, I couldn't get into the Rebels. I was just off them. And I'm watching there and I'm thinking, what is this team missing? And it's a shame it went over my head because I wrote a whole fucking book on it, mate. But there's zero leadership in that team. And we don't even need, you know what? At one end of the spectrum, you've got your Michael Hooper captain style, right? You got your Richie McCaw, your Kieran Reid captain style. But at this point, mate, you'll settle for Lodi Takiri slapping Sam Norton Knight at the end of the game. That's the type of leadership that they need. Too many times Dylan Peach dropped the ball, some shit kick, some shit drop, some pass over the sideline, and it's a she'll be right, we'll get her next time type attitude, and it's fucking shooting them in the foot. That's not what you should be doing. You should be doing that whole squat where your ass isn't on the ground, but you know, you're squatting, you stay that squat depth and you look disappointed, mate. You look at the turf and look disappointed and no one comes and grabs you on the back. That's the state that they're in. They are terrible.
Do you know what? Just to build on that point, I was just number of disappointing facets. The fact that the Tars lost a game that was a must win, but look at the penalties.
All the momentum too, mate. The momentum. Fucking cross the line.
But just it was showed a lack of a rugby nous. You're absolutely right. They made poor decisions at times. But I think they'll probably, you can maybe argue that the fact that they're trying too hard, they want to impress, they want it too much potentially. And you
I think that's right, mate. They're playing like they're afraid to lose. They're
correct.
Playing like they know they have to win. But I think the one thing I'm going to say in the Tars defense, and there's not a lot to defend this week, pretty much in rugby, if you stay under 10 penalties and the opposition goes above 10, you're going to win the game. And the penalty count was 18-4. In a game where a penalty equals potentially 3 points or 30 meters of territory, that's astronomical. The Tars were never in it. I don't think the All Blacks would lose to the Rebels if the penalty count was 18-4. That's an obscene penalty count. And it shows you that the Tars were probably overplaying the hand, were probably trying too hard, were not getting the timing right, were not reading the referee right, had poor leadership, had poor discipline. But also, how do the Rebels play 80 minutes and concede 4 penalties? It's that seems a bit how's your father to me. So I'm a bit empathetic for the Tars on that front. I think that that's the story of the game.
It's interesting, to your point though, the Rebels were just played rugby smarter. And you're absolutely right. They literally had 44% possession. They had 36% territory. They just played the referee better, you know. And that's a key point. And obviously, due to the subjective nature of refereeing in rugby, you have to get that right. And the Tars just were not smart. But I thought it was telling. The fact is that Marco Hooper, a Wallaby and Waratahs great, comes out at halftime or at the end of the game. You know, I think it was halftime, checking the ground to see if there's dew on the ground, how much sass that he's giving it, you know. Said, oh, just check it. There's so much. No, mate, your team's just dropping the ball, champ.
On that penalty point, you know what it tells me from the corner of my eye when I was watching it was the Tars kept losing the ball on the 22. That's where they were not retaining possession, where the Rebels, they only had the ball in their 5-meter line. And the Tars were constantly infringing as a means of stopping them, and the Rebels weren't having it. They were kept going for touch, kept corner scrum, quick tap, as we saw. And the Tars were doing the same thing and the 4 penalties that they got, but they were never in a position where Melbourne needed to concede a cheeky penalty.
Mm. You're right, because it was like there, you'd get to the 22 and you'd have possession of the ball for a while, and then someone would just do a stupid kick, pick the ball away. But like, guys, you haven't had the ball for a while. Like, let's just keep hold of it for a while. And look, it was a cancer. Everyone had it, you know, had just kicked it away at some points. Even really good players, like even Max Jorgensen, got the ball in space, kicked it away. Poor pass. Like, seriously, do the basics. I think I mentioned to one of you, like, I know we're trying too hard and we're piling on the Tars a little bit, but
we're not piling on enough.
But if we're losing, let's play smart. Let's play territory. Let's make the other team make mistakes, you know, and let's do that. And
thank God the Rebels did, mate. Mm. They fucked up heaps. It could have been much worse.
Mm. Oh, I just think the Tars are just, they're a bit of a basket case, aren't they? Because look, the entire front row is injured. 1, 2, and 3 are out. And the Tars didn't have any depth there to spare. And they're all injured. And the second row, we've come in here and spoken about how good Holloway has been at the line out, and he has been outstanding. Mm. He's still a number 6. Lee Warner, also a number 6. So literally they're running on the field without a tight 5, full stop. Makes your assignment pretty bloody tough, doesn't it? And then you jump into the back line. Parisa and Nwangini Tuaso, your 2 stars, they've already checked out, mate. They're protecting the body for next season. They're not there. So the other blokes, Walton Jorgensen, you know, he's a gun. He's 19 years old and weighs 105. Peach, Edmed Gordon, they're all tiny men.
Mm.
Who's your ball carrier? You don't have a tight 5. Parisa Nungani Tuase pissed off. And then Gleeson is not having, he had that breakout season last season. He is not having a backup season at all. This season.
He's plateauing.
You know, yeah, massively. And without Michael Hooper, they don't really have a 7 either, and they didn't have a gamble this week. So you look at this squad, and I think, if anything, maybe now with hindsight, maybe they've overperformed a little bit, being so close in so many games. I know they've lost them all, but the fact that the wheels hadn't come off completely is sort of testament to some sort of culture or something, because I can't see the making of a half-decent team then. I mean, the only silver lining for me for the Tars was Harrison's return. He looked real good off the bench, Will Harrison. And I think, you know, had his career played out differently, he would be the Wallaby 10 right now.
You know what the sad thing is yeah, look, His step for that is step for whoever, for the try. I can't remember who it was who scored. Yeah, magical moment again, but it's that thing of doing the basics. The issue for the 2 Waratahs I have right now is I actually don't think they're going to win a game until the 18th of May. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's 6 rounds away. And that is because of problem. I expect them to lose to the Brumbies. I expect them to lose to the Satyrs now. I expect him to lose to the Chiefs, the Canes, the Brumbies again, and even the Tars over in Perth. There's an argument that they'll lose that. Like,
they're doing a mirror match playing the Tars.
It's literally, it's the sad, and I'm being reactionary right now. I get that. But their season's over. They're not going to make the playoffs. Like, their season is over. And that, for a franchise that is in the state that plays, well, one of the two biggest states in terms of rugby numbers at grassroots level, it's just not good enough. And for the 10 years or 11 years I've lived here, I feel like there's only been maybe two or three that have been, in inverted commas, successful. And it's just disappointing.
Think about the Blodgers who went down to every single Tars game this year and what they've seen. You know?
Nice stadium, though. Cost us a few nurses and teachers.
It's a nice stadium. But if you've bought the tickets to the three home games, I feel for you, man. But, you know, you go home to reap what you sow, and what they're reaping right now is absolute bollocks.
We are reactionary. That's the job of the podcast, to come on here and be sensationalist. Because the other people can't. They're too close to the camp.
That's why we do it.
Right? The Coleman's doing this. The boys are doing this. It's fucking unacceptable. The sport is on its knees. It's bankrupt. We're getting poached from Japan, poached from rugby league.
It's on its pelvis, man.
Hey, people don't know rugby's on TV, mate. If rugby is going to thrive, we need, and I'm sorry, we need the Waratahs and the Queensland Reds winning at home as a bare minimum. Okay, winning, doing well in the comp, being a top four team, being a title contender, fantastic. That's gravy. But we need them winning at home. When was the last time the Waratahs won at home? And I think we all went out the first game last season when they beat the Brumbies. And even as Brumbies fans, we were devastated because we knew how important it was for Australian rugby that the Tars were building something and were getting a bit of momentum. The fan base is still there, man. It's still there, but there's just nothing to get around. So with all of that said, we came on here and we said, you pick and stick with Coleman. You know, you've got to build a continuity. He's a decent coach at club rugby over in America, yada, yada, yada. At this point, we know his contract's up at the end of the year. At this point, they can't make the finals. My question to you boys, I guess, is it's a triple barrel question. One, stay or go? Because I think you were on here last week saying stay, Richard. The week before you were on here saying stay. Has it got to the go point? Are we stay or go? Second question, is it stay or go now? Do you put in the assistant who apparently is running most of the rugby anyway?
Doing a very good job, right? Is he? He's running it now.
He's out anyway. Yeah. So my second question, first question is stay or go. Second question is, do you do it now? Do you pull the trigger? Or do you let the season play out and just bury the new story and then quietly remove him at the end of the season?
Give me the
and
third barrel.
Three, who do you go for? Who's your pick? Because there isn't someone waiting in the wings. And that will be the criticism of a podcast coming on and sack a go. Well, who are you going to get? So what do you boys think? I'm going to throw it to you first. Richard, stay or go? Coleman.
See, I think you stay right now, but I think if you haven't started the search for his successor, you start now.
And so you're saying you're getting rid of him, but you're doing it discreetly at the end of the season?
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you go now, then you basically, if you're going to get rid of him now, then you have to get rid of him completely. And there isn't someone waiting in the wings. To your point, if the assistant coach is doing it, he's not proving anything right now to me anyway. They're not doing anything. So find a legitimate coach from overseas or somewhere, but I know finance is an issue. I get that. And I know people will talk about Checker and all the other things. We don't know the finances. But there's got to be someone out there who do your research and get him to start in preseason. So finish off the season, because even if a new guy comes in now, you've still got the potentials of Parise down in toys. You got Marky Mark not performing at the right. Get the new coach in the beginning of next year, where he has a blank canvas to work.
Wouldn't you want that person in there now, signing, doing contracts, finding people?
Potentially, if they're doing all that, yes, but not actually doing the coaching per se. Not be the one that running training sessions, etc. Yes, the person would have an idea about who he wants to bring in. New signing has
but
to.
Coleman's
come
not coached 2025 for you.
No.
Can I throw a fourth barrel in there at you, Richard? How do you do it? Do you tell the media and tell Coleman, nah, man, you're here 2025. Absolutely. It's our every intention.
Do you take a
letter off his locker a week? Next, it's Mr. Colma. Then it's Colm. Just let him know slowly.
That it's just Colm.
How do you do it?
For hilarity purposes, just take the letter off a week at a time just to completely humiliate
his name wrong in the email. Leader, so it ends up with man, so it's ambiguous towards the end.
Yes, stop it. Look, I think you'd absolutely tell the media that we're seeing how the season goes. You know, we're supporting our man at the moment, fully knowing that you're lying to the collective, but you fully know that
Jim, you're the media for the New South Wales Waratahs. I'm a journalist, really. Hello there, Jim. Just a question, mate. Darren Coleman, does he have full support of the board? Where is he currently sitting with the New South Wales Waratahs? Division will be there at the end of the season.
Yeah, with every intention to renew Mr. Coleman for another 5 years at the conclusion of this season. Irrespective of results, we believe him to be the man at the team. He's going to take this team forward and turn this franchise around, absolutely.
Now, what way to committal? Throw it my way, my turn.
But then I can't. Behind closed doors, mate. I'm taking names off lockers, getting his name wrong in the email, having secret whispers code meetings that he's not invited to.
And secret handshakes that he doesn't know about the players. Yeah.
When he comes out of the lift, everyone disperses.
I'm waiting for Blake's response to hide behind me. We're going to complete an overview or a review at the end of the season. That's what you're going to hide behind, Blake.
Look, getting rid of the coach, we know it's not the silver lining.
Australian rugby, it's
complex, it's complicated, and the boys aren't performing at the moment, and we're as disappointed as anyone else with that. So what we need to do is conduct a thorough review in line with the ARU high performance, and we'll let that review play its course. We're not going to make a comment any sooner. And for now, Darren Coleman is the coach of the New South Wales Waratahs. Thank you. Next question. I could fucking do that job in my sleep.
Yeah, but you don't sell papers, mate. It doesn't sell papers.
Yours is selling papers, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no headline grab, mate. Come on.
Meanwhile, there's but one letter left in the bloke's locker.
All comes out in the doco.
In all seriousness, are we letting the team, the players off the hook? Because Colin's now become a convenient scapegoat here?
Yeah, he's done.
Yeah, to your point, but I think we can call out the players because it's still ultimately the coach has to put the players out into the pitch and they have to be the one who put into action the strategy, tactics, and have the core basic skills. So the players have to take a large proportion of the blame. However, you know from being in a team situation, if you're not successfully prepared, motivated, try too hard, all those kind of things, ultimately it comes back to the coach. It's his or her head on the chopping block. Ultimately, at the end of the day, because you're not going to change a whole squad, but you can change a coach. So ultimately, it comes down to him.
All right, jumping over to the Rebels then, because, I mean, good on them. They're top six, I think, at the moment. But they fucking lost by 50 the week before to the Hurricanes. So the Rebels are the real topsy-turvy Australian team because we come on here and every time when they lose, mate, they lose big. I'm going to stick to my under-15s analogy with the Rebels. When it's going their way, they just get better and better and better. When it's not going their way, they take the ball and they go home. That's my read of the Rebels at the moment. But one thing I will say, my favourite player, Taniela Tupou, showed how bloody good he is in this game, didn't he? Came on and absolutely dominated. Nick Stiles, the forward scrum coach of the Rebels, came out and made some interesting comments about Tupou. And he said, if you do the stats, he's played more minutes than any other prop over the last 3 years in Super Rugby. Queensland ran him into the ground, basically taking pot shots at the strength and conditioning program in Queensland. And the fact that Queensland over-relied on him and said, we are needing to build him effectively from the ground up down here in Melbourne. And we're not rushing that project. Does that give you confidence that for the first time he's being managed to get his body in the right shape, and then we're starting to see it? We saw glimpses 2 weeks ago. He had a ripper this weekend playing less minutes. Or is that read a little bit to me of code of we're not going to push him?
Yeah, but the other thing was what was interesting in the interview after the game was he actually admitted the fact that he's put on a few too many kgs as well. So with the fact that he's owned up to that, with the support system that's probably in place, maybe it is a good sign moving forward. I think we just need to just rein back a little bit. He was the difference, you know, scrummaging, yes. The try as well, yes. But it's still in short bursts. Let's hopefully, for him moving forward, those short bursts get longer. So they become longer bursts.
And I think that's what Sars's comments were.
I agree. So that's
what we're working towards that. But if we continued on the trajectory of flogging him like they did, would pull another Achilles 2 weeks into the season.
Absolutely. Jim?
Yeah, look, I sort of read that as a bit of a pot shot at the ARU at the same time, them talking down to Queensland, because fuck how much money they've invested into that program up there. I liked seeing a little battle between. Look, Tupou, I'll make a decision when I see it. Did he come on and sort of cement the win for him? Yeah, he did, right? Really important. But I'm not ready to pass a comment off on Tupou just yet. I'm going to wait and see. Can't be showing up to work fat, man. I can't get past that bit.
Just last thing on this game before we move on, because I know we've got to move. Just a couple of things. It was good to see Piketty obviously come off the bench. I thought Darcy Lancaster also looked good for the Rebels too on that wing. There was you already mentioned Will Harrison as well. Josh Cannon made a big impact when he came on, so there for the Rebels too. So there's a few positives.
Piketty coming back.
Yeah, so there's lots of positives, but definitely there's lots of areas for improvement.
And look, Carter Gordon's goal kicking still
question mark. Yeah,
the biggest question mark. Well, we'll get to that, I guess, when we get to the Brumbies, which we'll probably do next. Which is Noah's kicking at 100% this season, and his career stats is 87%, and he's kicked penalties to win games for the Wallabies and the Brumbies. You know, he is a bloke who delivers when the pressure's on. And I just think that's enough for him to be the Wallaby 10 at this stage. There's still plenty of time left to play in the season, but he's a clear front runner for me. And I often tweet stuff like that, and people are just like, well, who says that has to have a 5-8? That's the goal kicker. Well, who the fuck else is it going to be? Every single Super Rugby club we have, the 5-8 is the goal kicker. I don't give a fuck if it's John Eel as a second row or Tupou wants to start slotting him. But whoever it is, they better start slotting them. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Yeah. It's all about kicking the goals, not what number you got in your back.
Yeah.
10 helps, but.
Yeah, the only bloke kicking for every club is a 10. So whoever you pick at 10 is going to kick your goals. So I just, for me, that's the end of that argument. And if you are not considering playing Carter Gordon at 12 or 15, and I don't think you would unless you got minutes there at Super Rugby, Noah's the 5-8, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think, look, to a couple of things regarding Noah. I agree with everything you said in regards to he's the most secure kicker. He's at a franchise that values taking the points, which to your point last week or the week before suggests he's talked about his kicking coach afterwards. But I think what's good about Noah, he seems to be standing a lot flatter and taking the ball on, you know, rather than he was very, very deep before. Because they used to play off white. So I think that's a real advantage. I think he trusts who are outside him as well. My one concern with Noah is that I like my players to defend in the position that they like to defend, that they're supposed to defend in. There's too many times where Noah defends out on the wing. You see him trying to hide him defensively. So big props to Noah kicking, standing a lot flatter, but defensively there's still a question mark at him at the test match level.
Yeah, I don't think he shirks defense. I think it's just a strategy of the Brumbies. It's not like you're hiding Quade or Curtly. Mm-hmm. It's clearly just a Brumby strategy, but I agree. I prefer my fly half to defend in that channel as well. And he isn't defending in that channel, so I agree there. But his offensive play has never been better. I agree he's taken it to the line. He looks shades of Richie Mo'unga, not comparing them at all, but I'm seeing a bit of that confidence in his game to get two touches within the one play, to take the ball to the line, to show and go, just building that confidence. And I think we forget he's so young. So yeah, he's the front runner in that.
Can I ask Jim, what are your thoughts? If he becomes the Wallaby 10, which we've suggested that he is, do you play Lonergan next to him? Because Lonergan and McDermott are two very different players. You know, are you going to play up 9? Are you going to play up 10? Tate, the sniping, looking for the gaps, whereas Lonergan's more the pass first, look for your 10 and get him to control. I know Smith, we don't know what Smith's going to do. If you do pick Noah, pick a 9. Yep.
I just reckon if you pick Lonergan at 9 for a Lolasio 10 combo, you've invested in Lolasio running your team for the next year, 2 years. Like, that's the decision by picking those two. If you pick a Tate and Lolasio, you're going to let the game or let the way in which the team plays sort of dictate itself. I can't see Nick White not getting that jersey at this point, the way in which he's governing that Western Force team around and the history that he has with Lolasio. That's where I see the 9 jersey going.
It's fascinating, isn't it? It's such an exciting that 9 and 10 are both so up for grabs and blokes are playing well. Like Lonergan, that's the best I've ever seen him play on the weekend. He was sensational. Nick White has just gone to the Force and reminded everyone that he's the form halfback in this country probably more consistently than anyone else. Tate had the strongest start to the season and has maybe come off the boil just a fraction. Not much at all. He's still playing quite well. It's really exciting, but it really does come down to that combination. And I like your point, Jim, that Nick White and Noah have an existing combination. But then I also like your point, Richard, that maybe Noah's attacking better because it isn't Nick White. Lonergan's just giving him quick ball and saying, you control us. I don't need to steer the ship. It's a fascinating a penny for Schmidt's thoughts on what the 9 and 10 combination will be. Because, yeah, it's exciting. It's really, really interesting. But Brumbies Reds, boys, absolute game of the round, total ripper. It was just a salivating game of rugby. I'm going to get the elephant out of the room right now, though. And we were at the Tars Highlanders game where there was just 2 scrums in the last 10 minutes and that was the end of the game. And basically the last 10 minutes of this game was just scrums.
No, yeah. I thought Ben O'Keefe stopped the clock. Actually,
no, I thought he handled it well, but that kills me. Why is he allowed to stop the clock then, but not earlier in the game? Like, just make it a rule then. And even if, say what you like, Ben O'Keefe did stop it, the ball was in play for maybe 3 minutes of the last 10. There was no way they played more than 30% of the last 10 minutes of the game. When you have a 1-point game, the top 2 Australian teams in it, no one wants to watch 7 minutes of scrums. I'm sorry. And O'Keefe doesn't want to make a decision because whichever way he puts his hand, that's the end of the game. And I would argue in those scrum resets, there was at least twice where the Brumbies should have got a penalty and Noah would have slotted it and that was game over. And O'Keefe just went up, gone up, both sides, because he didn't want to make that call. And then likewise, he did the same thing to Queensland when they clearly won a scrum penalty. He didn't want to make that call. And I don't blame him either, because you don't want to decide the game on a scrum penalty. But in the 60th minute, I think he blows them without thinking twice about it. I just think a very simple fix. You know, NFL has the 2-minute warning where the game stops and, you know, you get a reset the time. Just the last 10 minutes of the game, stop clock. The clock stops for shots at goals and scrums.
I just reckon the order is get the game flowing. And then let the teams decide the win. That must be the MO in which how these games are governed.
Yep. No, I agree. And I think that's what he's trying to do at the scrum. And it, both teams are trying to get the edge on each other at the scrum. So they keep fucking collapsing and they've got to keep resetting. And the time just ticks and ticks and ticks and ticks.
Mate, it's our game. It's our game.
No, but I just think it should be in the final 10 minutes of a game.
It's our game.
It rule that the ball, the whistle, the time starts when the ball enters the scrum. And as soon as the ref goes for a reset or a penalty, it stops.
Got the seconds off it.
The ball is back and played. And I understand you can't do that for the full 80, right? Rugby might go for 3 hours on a bad day. And you've got TV rights and advertising and everything else. But for the last 10 minutes, that's all I'm saying. Now, my Brumbies were the beneficiary of it this week. That scrum resets. But
gosh, you're so impartial.
Fuck, it killed me, man. It's just such a shit ending to the game. And I'd do it. If I was up by a point or two, I'd be like, props, someone type a shoelace. Sweet. All right, someone go early. All right, someone wheel to the left. Like, you would just milk it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, of course they do. It's exactly what goes down.
Of course they do. And I just, it's such a dour end to the game. Anyway, enough of that negativity aside, it was a fucking ripper of a game. I enjoyed every minute of it. I thought both teams went up a gear, as they always do against each other. It is always a ripper between these two teams. I thought the only criticism you could say was there was a bit of drop ball, but it was just in response to insane line speed and physicality. I thought everyone was up for the program here, and I loved it.
Yeah, Diamonds came out to play, which was good to see.
They did.
Can I ask which who won the type five and even the back row battle? Because there was a lot made about the fact is the dynamic nature of the Reds back three in terms of their forwards, 6, 7, 8. I'll give you my opinion actually afterwards, but who did you think won that battle? Type five and the back row, right?
I'll go back row for you first, because we've been swinging off the Queensland back row. I think the Queensland back row in the last 2 weeks, someone has identified that they're not protecting their own ball and the vulnerable breakdown.
Agreed.
And it's cost them two games in a row against the Western Force and the Brumbies. That I think in both those games, that was their fault. So to judge them on that, I need to see how they respond to it. Because I think they've been playing as a link, Wright and Wilson, that McWright and Wilson have been playing a bit more of a linking sort of old school Steve Hoyles role in attack. In defense, I think McWright's a beast over the ball, and Harry Wilson is a beast defensively. So they ticked all the boxes there. But I think offensively, the Reds did not secure the breakdown and the Brumbies were able to give them fits in that part of it. So in that respect, I'm giving the points to the Brumbies. And I also just think Valentini just carries so consistently well. He's just a guarantee he will just take it to the line and get over the ad line. And he just plays so many minutes. So I'm going to give the back row win to the Brumbies, which I think going into it, you may be Valentini, but you wouldn't have thought the other two would have held their own. But I'm going to give that to the Brumbies. Jim, you tell us the type five, who you got there.
Type five, I was looking into the back row, but I was going to give this one to the Reds, I reckon, just for the way in which their lineouts functioned. And I don't know, you're talking about the size. You're talking about the size of the back line in the bars. You sort of feel the same thing in the front row of the Brumbies. None of them are massive blokes, are they?
Yeah, they're missing Alaa Taua.
Look, for me,
which is a crucial.
Yeah, which was a massive loss to Alaa Taua. The reason why I asked the question, because I actually give both victories to the Brumbies, which surprised me. I think to your point, Blake, the Reds played way too loose. They tried to get out wide, and even their carries, they were hit by great line speed, and they didn't actually make many post-contact meters. They didn't even break the advantage that line a lot. If you look at the stats, a lot of them, like Harry Wilson's been carrying the ball well, didn't do that great in the game. So I think the Brumbies back row jackaled really well, but also the replacements as well. Look at Reimer made a big difference when he came on, you know, from an impact perspective. And even the type five, it's one of the best games that I've seen Darcy Swain play for a while, and Caden Neville,
for me. Yeah. I thought,
yeah, both of them.
Oh, no.
Both of them in terms of the basics of clean out time at the breakdown. Lineouts worked. Yeah, they lost a couple of lineouts due to, I think it was a lack of communication with the hooker as well. But I think that both the type five and the back row was won on points by the Brumbies, which surprised me, because I think a lot of this season we've talked about the Brumbies trying to play a slightly different way and try to be a bit more expansive, you know. But when the push came to shove, that pack really stood up for the Brumbies, and I think that's a really good sign for them.
I reckon you're on the money there, Richard, particularly on the Darcy Swain, because I don't know if you're across the stats, but the dude attempted 21 tackles. The next highest in that outfit, both type fives, was 9.
Right. And he also did heaps of shady shit, which I just love.
Old school.
I'm a big Darcy Swain fan. I know lots of people are off him because of his discipline. I just think that can be a bit of a lazy stereotype.
The lazy narrative. I agree. He's a very good player.
There's more to him than that. You know what I mean? He was a young bloke. He made one or two dumb decisions in big games. Okay. And he's copped it, right? He's copped it. Let him be aggressive. We've certainly lacked that in Australian rugby, an aggressive second half for a fair period of time. Let's just embrace it. I actually think, and you know, we're reactionary and revisionary. If the Reds won this by 1 point, we're probably leaning Reds. There was not much in this game, and both teams, lots of players played excellent, which we could go to. But I think another spot the Reds are dropping the ball just a fraction too is subbing their 10 around the 60th minute. And I think if they subbed Liner not for Crichton, they subbed him for McLachlan Phillips. I think he's better than Crichton. No disrespect to Crichton, but I'm not. He doesn't manage. I've never seen him manage a game. Mm-hmm. Like, if I was picking Queensland 10s, it's Liner, McLachlan Phillips, James O'Connor, then you're going to Crichton. And just giving him the keys with 20 to go made them quite side to side, and they lost a fair bit of structure there, which I thought played a bit of a role. And then also the narrative is goal kicking, right? Liner missed one from in front. They win the game.
Yeah. No, just the other, thing going back about that, Ted, I agree, but I also think it's I actually like Kalani Thomas, but I think he plays very differently to Tate as well. So if you're bringing on a nine that plays different, I think Kalani Thomas passes very good. He seems a very good player. If you've got a different nine coming down, he plays it slightly different with a 10. Also, so there's a lot of change going on in two very key positions. Don't get me wrong, the forwards have got to win the ball to go forward, etc. But it's a lot to change your nine and 10 and both play slightly different around the 60-minute mark. I think it's a big call. It's proof.
And I also think Jordy Bataille on return had an absolute fucking rip up and showed his value, class, size, speed. I thought he was excellent, Jordy Bataille. Look, both teams were great.
Other than dropping it cold off a line break.
Yeah, I mean, he's good for one of those a game, though, isn't he? I thought lots of players put themselves in good stead at the end of this game. And the Brumbies won it. And I actually think in this case, they were the better side, because I think the Queensland, you know, they had that rolling maul yellow card penalty try followed by another rolling maul try only minutes later. It was sort of that one burst is where they got a lot of their points, whereas the Brumbies were probably dominant for longer passages, so probably deserved the win. But look, there wasn't much in it. I think the Reds, they started the season sensational. They've got a fantastic coach. They've got a really good squad. Can they respond now? And I think one area of that response is going to be protecting their own ball at the breakdown. And then if they can make those adjustments, they're still going to be a really, really strong team, but they've definitely lost a little bit of that sheen, haven't they?
Mm. Yeah.
Look, they'll still be a good team, as you say, but the next couple of weeks is going to be hugely important.
I think they've got
them.
A bye, though, don't they?
They do, yeah, they do.
I think that's timely for them. Because the Force and the Reds, both very winnable games for them.
Mm. Talking about the Force, I just want to touch on it briefly there with the game that obviously we missed out on. This was the game I actually watched the second half of this game, the Drew of the Force. Can I just say, I think amazing that the game still went ahead. I'm not sure if it would, the amount of rain that went down and the pitch and the standing water. I'm not quite sure. It's a very, very wild game. It was like watching an old school, like, thirds. I don't know, I mean, because of the talent, but just like watching an old thirds or fourth game back home, just because it was just, actually the game wouldn't have gone on at home. It's crazy.
When I played once at Rockdale Oval Subbies, I reckon it was that level of rain, and just catching the ball felt like an absolute mission. Like just the rain hitting your eyes, how wet everything was. The fear of throwing a pass, like, it's just like the fact that these players just continue to play like it's almost a normal game. And then every time you get tackled, just thinking, I may drown in this ruck.
Yeah, absolutely.
Terrifying.
Terrifying.
But you know what? I have to say congratulations to the Drew, though. I think, and someone will correct me if I'm wrong, that's six on the spin, I think, at home now for the Drew.
It's pretty cool, isn't it?
A completely different beast at home, and massive congratulations. And watching the crowd, even in very inclement conditions, the crowd getting into the game and supporting them out there is fantastic. And as you said last week, what a great thing it is to have the Drua and the in the men's Super Rugby and the women's Super Rugby. It's great to have them in there, and congratulations, 31-13. Very deserving of the win. Even the others didn't. The Force never really looked like they were going to get back in it, even with obviously the red card. So, congratulations to the Drua.
Yeah, the Drua are a problem at home. They're, and I kind of like that. Like the game went ahead because you go to New Zealand, it's fucking cold, right? That's a pretty big.
So event. Cold.
You go to another place, but you go to fucking Fiji. It's tropical bitches.
Deal with it.
Deal with it. We'll be right.
They're just going to take the show on the road, the Drua.
Like, one thing we've got is handling and size. We'll be right, guys. Don't worry about us in the wet. Like, come to our conditions. I actually put some money on the Fourth. I think it was, the line was 12 or something to lose by less than 12. And I thought, you know, Force coming off a win, they're going to turn on the TV. And I was like, what's wrong with my TV? And then I clocked what was going on. And I was like, right, Force are not going to get close here. It's going to be like they are being ambushed by the conditions and the Drua here. This is a problem for them.
I know we're being a bit disrespectful to the other games, but obviously the other ones, the Blues winning, you feel bad for Pacifica. We mentioned last week a multitude of away games, or so many, they're never really at home, but getting absolutely panned by.
Honestly, salacious. Pacifica and Highlanders, I couldn't give a fuck about watching them.
Well, it was Pacifica Blues, so...
No, I know, but they're my two teams that I'm like...
Well, the Hurricanes might be the team you want to watch because top of the conference, only team that are unbeaten at the moment, have a bye next week, so they're going to be unbeaten even more.
However, Cam Roygaard out for the entire season and international season.
Better way out.
I think... it's horrific for him and horrific for the Canes and the All Blacks.
Massive, massive loss.
Yeah. Just so I like that this win came at a serious expense.
Yeah, not how you want to do it.
Nah, massive.
Let's just project forward to week 7. There are just the 4 games, just because we're going to now get into the weeks where teams start to have a bye. So obviously the first round of the game, the first game of the round, should I say, is the Blues Force. Eden Park, I believe, 2. Prediction, boys?
No chance. Blues, 12 plus.
You're talking about top 2 team in the comp versus clearly the worst team in the comp.
Or bottom 2 team in the comp.
Bottom 2. Tars are right up there, let's be honest.
So we're all going to go with Blues on. The next game down at Amy Park, Rebels versus the Drua. We know how strong the Drua have been playing, but that's been at home. How are they gonna go against the Rebels down in Melbourne?
Jim? I reckon Rebels are about the worst team to back because they either show up or they don't. There's no consistency with them at all.
They're favourites here as it stands now.
Yeah, and you know, they just beat Tars. They're such an anomaly, the Rebels. Who fucking knows? You know, conventional wisdom would say Rebels at home. Rebels, they're coming 6th in the comp. Drew are 7th. But I don't know. I don't know. Where are you, boys? Where are you, Richard?
I'll just say I think that the Fijian Drew are home, as I mentioned, are a different beast. But I think away from home, I think they're not as consistent. So, for example, they've lost to the Pacifica away from home this year. They've lost to the Blues away from home. Most teams will do that. They've lost the Chiefs away from home. I also think that you're right. The Melbourne Rebels, I have no idea. Toss of the coin, but let's just go with the Rebels just because they're the home team and they seem to be a bit more. They're on a bit more of a high potentially. The Drua are a bit questionable away from home. Let's go to the Rebels.
Jim? I just reckon on the same vein that we speak about how the Drua away from home are a problem. If they're not speaking about it every day of every minute of every day this week, because they've got to buy after this week, you might as well put all your eggs in a basket and prove it to yourself that you can win on the road.
Racist a reference. To do it.
I'm going to go Drua. But it requires Rebels to beat themselves. So I'm going Drua. Drua's
winning. I like that.
Chiefs Pacifica. So down in Waikato. So Chiefs Pacifica. So that was a really important game that Damian McKenzie missed, because obviously he's building up for this game, the biggest
game.
That's right.
I can't get over the
Chiefs. Home to the Pacifica.
One thing you would say about the Chiefs, though, they've been off the boil for 120 minutes now. Because the week before against the Highlanders, they got pumped in the second half. Then they lost against, you know, at the time, bottom-ranked Crusaders. They have not played a strong side for a number of weeks, and they haven't played well in quite a while. With all of that said, Chiefs are winning this at the canter. But they need some form, because they haven't been in it for a couple of weeks.
And game of the round is surely at GIO Stadium, or whatever it may be now called, Brumbies Waratahs.
Surely Stadium, I believe, according to Ricky.
Thank you so much. What is, how many, I'm assuming we're all going to go Brumbies because of where they're at the moment. This is a game, though, where you go with the Tars. They got nothing to lose. They just turn up and suddenly pick it.
That's what I was going to say, Richard. I reckon it feels like that.
It does have that written on it, doesn't it? Yeah. And that's Australian teams at the moment. Every time you start thinking Queensland are legit, they just lose to the Force. And as soon as you're like, oh, I'm not sure if the Brumbies are there, they just turn it back on just to make sure. We look like idiots. It's got boil over written all over it, but I can't see how the Brumbies don't win this, though, with all that said.
I think the core skills are basics. I think the Brumbies will just get there, but it'd be a lot closer than what everyone potentially will suggest. So Brumbies by a very small margin. Waratahs like losing in close games, so, you know. Thanks, boys. This is a very quick review of the games. Anything else to mention?
Yeah. The
Scrum Doctor.
Announced his next assistant coach. Big signing. Scrum Doctor. Huge.
Yeah. It's massive. And I think he'll make huge strides, Mike Cron, for the Wallabies pack. And, you know, it's exciting to see, you know, how they progress, because they've definitely got the pool of talent, you know, particularly in that type five, to get a good scrum. So exciting time for the Wallabies.
Just to compare the signings to Eddie's first few signings for assistant coaches to Schmidt's first few signings, a little bit of a different vibe coming you across.
Yeah, I know. The other thing for the news, good luck to Michael Hooper, who is going to make his Sevens debut in that Hong Kong Sevens. What an amazing place to make a Sevens debut. For him, he's looking trim at the moment.
Isn't he? Yeah.
I mean, he's lost a lot of mass, obviously, to get in shape. Hopefully he does well. Look, if he makes the Olympics or not, who knows? But I hope he's had such a stellar career. I hope he does perform at a high level, you know, and does himself, no disservice. And the legend of Michael Hooper is remembered for his greatness rather than maybe underachieving our seven. So,
does anyone just love the age of the assistant coaches Schmidt's bringing in? I mean, Cron looks 500 years old. Laurie Fisher might be 1,000. I just love that we're just going to roll. And Schmidt himself tried to retire already. It's just going to be the players rocking in with their TikToks and their nonsense. Just to the senior citizens. Just, I love it. Oh, I'm up and about for it.
It's proper private school board. It's the board.
I like it. The old fellas, they look like they know what they're doing. Actually, a word today is Cron and Schmidt were down at the Rebels training, helping the Rebels out, getting some consistency, you know, in communication. You love to see it, don't you?
Well, Jesus, and I back the drill, mate.
Yeah, you pick role, mate. You pick role.
You know what? Look at that. Blake withholding information, Bryce. Until Jim's made his pick.
I don't like to move the line too much before I put in my $3 bet.
It's not a bad move by Phil Wall, though. Send the boys down there to make things a little less frosty.
Yeah. Meanwhile,
All right, boys. No, anything else?
Nah, always good chatting.
Thanks, boys.
Enjoy your rugby.